Welcome to the second hour's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org. This is Michael reading obituaries published in the Odessa American, Thursday, March 26th. Teresa Aguirre. Teresa Aguirre was peacefully called home the morning of Friday, March 20th, as she entered heaven's gates at the age of 60. Teresa Olivas was born May 9, 1959, in Artesia, New Mexico. Teresa is survived by her parents, Manuel and Luisa Olivas, her husband, Elias Aguirre, and three children, Angela, Elias, and Natalie Aguirre, her stepdaughters, Melissa and Dana Aguirre, her five grandchildren, her siblings, Manuel Jr. Olivas, Kathy Cantu, Viola McLaughlin, Tomas Olivas, and Oscar Olivas. She was predeceased by Mary Frances Olivas, sister-in-law, Connie Olivas, aunt, Helen Marquez, aunt, Jesse Olivas, uncle, Nolberto Aguirre, father-in-law. A funeral service is scheduled for Thursday, March 26th at 10 a.m. to be officiated by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Services. Due to current restrictions, the service will be streamed online. In order to virtually attend, you may text 432-385-9579 to obtain the link. With the current measures for public safety, a viewing will not be held or a gathering for the burial. Lloyd Eric Leschnauer. Lloyd Eric Leschnauer of Odessa passed away March 21st, 2020 in Midland, Texas. A private burial will take place at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Lloyd was born in Indianapolis, Indiana, to Alan and Susan Leschnauer on November 14th, 1970. He is survived by his parents, his sister Jennifer Leschnauer Doran, and brother-in-law Pascal Doran, his nieces Eve Lillian Doran, Isabel Olivia Doran, Ruth Madeline Doran, his brother Dr. Bradley G. Leschnauer, his sister-in-law Dr. Emily Williams, and his two nephews, Max Arthur Leschnauer and Jacob Milner Leschnauer. Memorials may be given to the University of Texas Permian Basin Advancement Fund at Advancement Office, UT Permian Basin, 4901 East University, Odessa, Texas, 79762. The family wishes to extend our thanks to the nurses and staff at Park Senior Living and to Kevin Mannix and his staff at Mannix Physical Therapy. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send family condolences, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Patty Jean Hissaw. Patty Jean Hissaw, 87, of Odessa, passed over to her heavenly home on March 24th, 2020. Private graveside services will be held on Friday, March 27th at 10 a.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. Patty was born December 17th, 1932, to Charles Spencer and Pearl Anderson in Blytheville, Arkansas. Patty is preceded in death by her loving husband, David B. Hissaw. Both of her parents, siblings Margaret Gersney, Charles S. Anderson Jr., C. Aubrey Anderson, and great-grandson Hunter Hissaw. Patty is survived by her children, Rebecca Jean Long and husband James David of Belton, David Hissaw Jr. and wife Deanna of Odessa, and Bobby and wife Jeanan Hissaw of Odessa. Her grandchildren, Megan and John Hutchison, Dayton Long, David III, and Christy Hissaw, Cindy and Furman Galbaldon, Marshall and Shanna Hisall, Crystal Hisall, Cassandra and Luis Moreno, Robert and Lisa Hisall, Cody and Aaron Hisall, step-grandchildren Karen Collins and Amy French. She is also survived by 30 great-grandchildren and 2 great-great-grandchildren. The family wants to extend a special thank you to Park Senior Living for their wonderful care of Patty. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send family condolences, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Jackie Wayne Smead Smedley. Jackie Smead Wayne Smedley, age 42, of Odessa, passed from this life on Monday, March 23, 2020. He was born on Friday, May 20, 1977, to the late Annie Mae Sailor Giles in Artesia, New Mexico. Those left to cherish his love and memories are his spouse, Shannon Patterson, daughter, Laura Smedley, sons, Jackie Wayne and Cody Smedley, stepson, Charlie Buck, brother, William Smedley, and spouse, Shara Wilborn Smedley, sister, LaDawn Powell, aunt, Sonia Giles, niece, Nancy Powell, and Melissa Smedley, nephews, John Wayne Wallace Jr., and Joshua Powell, sister-in-law, Andrea Smedley, as well as 4 grandchildren and numerous family and friends. He was predeceased in death by his mother and grandmother, Nancy Bush. The family will receive friends on Friday, March 27th, 2020, from noon to 9 p.m. at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, March 28th, at Acres West Funeral Chapel, and condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Death notices for March 26th. Roberta Imogene Steele Clay. Roberta Imogene Steele Clay, 90, of Odessa, died Monday, March 23rd in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Penny Darlene Ferris. Penny Darlene Ferris, 68, of Odessa, died Tuesday, March 24th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 3 p.m. Friday, March 27th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Charles Lanny Simmons. Charles Lanny Simmons, 74, of Odessa, died Tuesday, March 24th in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland.
American Red Cross urges blood donations by Michael Bauer. With COVID-19 continuing to spread across the country, the American Red Cross is urging everyone who is able to donate blood, even with places shutting down large gatherings in public places. While the American Red Cross Permian Basin chapter doesn't have blood services, on a national level, the organization has been encouraging anyone who is healthy and eligible all across the country to give blood and help maintain a sufficient blood supply to prevent shortages, while the number of confirmed coronavirus cases continues to increase. COVID-19 has closed hundreds of blood drives across the country. American Red Cross Permian Basin Chapter Executive Director Tracy Austin said. While that has remained a challenge, Austin says the organization on a national level has been able to adjust by having smaller blood drives across the country. The Red Cross in other areas is hiring phlebotomists and having smaller blood drives around the country so that people will feel more comfortable coming out to give blood because we're supposed to avoid crowds, Austin said. So this is a very critical need for people who need blood. People undergoing chemotherapy need blood, as well as those who need transfusions after car accidents and other things. Cold and flu season has already affected the nation's ability to maintain its blood supply, another reason why the Red Cross has urged people to donate. It is a critical need in our country right now, Austin said. We've really been encouraging people, regardless of whether they live, and regardless of what company is collecting blood, to step up and provide it because it is life-saving. Whether it is Vitalant or American Red Cross, Americans need to roll up their sleeves and give blood. According to Austin, the process has seen a big push, particularly in places like Dallas, Fort Worth, and Waco. They have a huge public relations push to get the public to come out throughout the country and give blood because this COVID-19 preventions are in place are causing people to not want to go to the large blood drives, which is why we're hiring more phlebotomists to have those smaller blood drives, and people can feel safe and keep the inventory up and carry out our life-saving mission, Austin said. Austin stressed how crucial it is for those who can donate blood. There are a lot of people who are not eligible to give blood, so those that are right now, it's just really imperative that we meet the needs of the hospitals and everyone who needs it, Austin said. It's something simple that people can do. It doesn't take much time or effort, but it does save lives. Woman killed in three-vehicle collision. A 39-year-old woman was killed in a collision involving three vehicles, including an 18-wheeler, around 4:08 p.m. Thursday in the 1200 block of East Interstate Highway 20 in Odessa. An OPD report details that Ricky Enriquez, 26, of Odessa, stopped for construction in a black Dodge truck in the westbound lane on I-20, while Manuel Rodriguez, 40, and passenger Amber Sahagun, 39, both of Decatur, traveled in a white Jaguar behind Enriquez Ranjit Singh, 42, of New York, also traveled west on I-20 in an 18-wheeler. The report details that Singh failed to control the speed of the 18-wheeler and collided into the back of the Jaguar, causing the Jaguar to collide into the back of the Dodge truck. OPD and OFR reportedly responded to the scene, where Sahagun was pronounced deceased on the scene, while Rodriguez was transported to a local hospital with life-threatening injuries. No others were injured during the incident. OPD is investigating the collision further. Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Sunday, March 22nd. MCH creates phone line for health screening. Medical Center Health System is creating a phone line for patients to call for health screenings when presenting signs for COVID-19 that will go live on Monday. Patients who are experiencing symptoms are being asked to call 432-640-2747. The phone line will be open from 9 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. Monday through Friday and from 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. If you have symptoms when the phone line is not open, patients are being asked to self-quarantine until the following day. As always, if it's an emergency, please call 911. Patients not at risk may be asked to self-quarantine at home until well or able to follow up with their usual health care provider. If the patient meets the criteria set by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the State Health Department, the patient will be scheduled for an appointment for further screening at one of three MCH urgent care clinics. The patient will then be tested for influenza and other viral illnesses. Again, it is important to call the number above first if presenting symptoms. If the MCH urgent care clinic determines the patient should be swabbed for COVID-19, the urgent care will request State Health Department approval. If the health department approves, the patient will be sent to our MCH urgent care on 42nd Street to be swabbed for COVID-19. The patient will be made aware they are a person under investigation, PUI, and should remain self-quarantined at home until confirmed. It can take up to 1 week for results to be returned. Patients cannot be swabbed for COVID-19 at the 42nd Street Urgent Care simply because they or their provider desire it. Patients can only be swabbed there with state health department approval. If the patient does not meet screening criteria, the state will not approve patient to be swabbed. If COVID-19 is confirmed, the patient will remain self-quarantined or provided necessary hospital care and will be under the supervision of the health department. This process is vital to help with overcrowding of the local emergency rooms and will help proper screening protocol to be completed. MCHS asks that you work with them as they continue to monitor this fluid situation.
PBBOR, Homes Sold Are on Market Longer, by Stuart Doreen. SDOREEN at HearstNP.com. The Permian Basin Board of Realtors February report showed good and bad for those selling a home inside Midland County. The good was that a seller has the potential to make a lot of money. The average home in February sold for $329,500. Also, the number of homes sold during the month was 33 more than February 2019. Real estate in Midland, Texas has been and remains strong in spite of all the bad news, said Carol Nall, MLS Executive Director for the Permian Basin Board of Realtors. However, there's evidence the market is beginning to trend, even subtly, toward the buyer for the first time in years. The average and median prices for a home sold in February were lower year over year, the first time that has happened in Midland County in more than a year, according to PBOR statistics. Also, the average home sold stayed on the market for 57 days, the largest number of days going back to March 2017. The February report also shows that no price category was immune to the days on the market rise. Other than homes in the $200,000 to $249,999 price range, all price ranges showed an average days on the market of at least 53 days, and more than half were greater than 60 days. The number of homes on the market is also approaching 500 again. The 493 homes available at the end of the month was 227 more than February 2019. Realtor Victoria Prince told the Reporter Telegram last week the number of homes available in the county rose to 535, and she expected another 100 on the market within a month. The last time there were 600 homes on the market inside Midland County was 2016. Supply, though, isn't a bad word for those at the Permian Basin Board of Realtors. Nall said even when the community appears headed toward a downturn, that this is really not the time to back off of housing start plans for the Permian Basin. We have been behind the housing curve for some time, and that has driven prices up with a steady climb, Nall said. We have to be willing to look at the current situation as an opportunity to catch up and revitalize our community and many of our neighborhoods, so that when recovery comes, it will be much more productive and supportive to our workforce. February report. Total houses on the market, 493. Homes sold, 178. Average days on the market, 57. Average price, $329,500. Median price, $295,000.
The Recording Library of West Texas is employing additional means to give you up-to-date information. In this part of the newspaper broadcast, we're going to play for you the audio from Texas Governor Greg Abbott's news conference giving updates on the coronavirus. This news conference was given today, Thursday, March 26th, at 2 p.m. from Austin. You will first hear Governor Abbott's remarks, followed by a short wrap-up by television station KXAN. We join the news conference just a few minutes in progress.
And that is less than 10% of the people who are tested for COVID-19 test positive. Now, last Friday, we had 5 deaths in Texas that have been reported connected to COVID-19. As of right now, there are now 18 deaths that have been reported that are connected to COVID-19. Last Friday, there were 39 counties in the state of Texas where COVID-19 had been identified. Today, there are 90 counties in Texas where COVID-19 has been identified. A new number that we are now reporting, and that is we have, as of today, 100 patients in hospitals in Texas with COVID-19. But this is a very important fact that people need to understand. Remember, I told you that there were more than 1,400 people who had been tested, but only 100 patients in hospitals, meaning obviously that less than 10% of the people who test positive need to be in a hospital as of this time. Now, our goal in this whole testing process is to test as many people as possible, to see those numbers grow, and then to see a leveling off of the increase in those numbers in Texas. So as we continue to increase testing, the fact of the matter is those who test positive will continue to increase. But just as important, as we continue the practice in the state of Texas of distancing ourselves from others to reduce the spread, the numbers of those testing positive will level off. In that regard, I'm very proud of county and local officials for working so aggressively to improve testing strategies, especially by the multitude of drive-through testing facilities that I've seen. And with the increased testing materials that we will be receiving, I anticipate even more either drive-through or easy access testing locations across the state of Texas. Also, we are very grateful for private sector medical centers that are ramping up testing facilities, making sure that we are testing as many people as possible in Texas for COVID-19. Additionally, I'm extremely proud of how the people across our state are stepping up to help out. They're helping out in part by demonstrating how well they are complying with all of the requests, whether it be through my executive order or local executive orders, to ensure that Texans are practicing self-distancing from others to make sure that we slow the spread in Texas. All of us have a collective responsibility to live up to the national standard, to do all we can to reduce the spread of COVID-19 in Texas. Additionally, we're so proud of the way that the people of the state, in quintessential Texas fashion, are stepping up to help out and volunteer. They're offering donations. We have doctors and nurses, some of them either retired or from out of state, who are volunteering their time and expertise to help this fight against COVID-19. We are incredibly grateful to our medical personnel who are on the front lines of this war against the spread of this disease. And I want to emphasize that there are so many people calling in all the time that if there's anybody in the state who wants to sell or donate supplies, or if you want to offer your own medical professional services, or you would like to volunteer, go to www.texas.gov/COVID-19. Now, one of our top priorities that we've been focusing on this week is making a good assessment of how our hospitals stack up with regard to their availability in the event that there is greater need placed upon our hospitals. So we did a good job of setting standards to ensure that we would open up more bed capacity, as well as setting standards to make sure we have access to information about what bed capacity is. If you recall, one thing that I issued by executive order was an executive order postponing elective non-essential medical surgery, waiving some licensing regulations to allow recently closed hospitals to come back online, as well as an executive order that would double the number of beds in some hospital rooms. And since those executive orders, I'm proud to tell you that in the aftermath of those executive orders, more than 3,000 beds have become available in hospitals across the state of Texas. To give you just a sampling of the availability of beds in one particular region, in the Dallas area, there are more than 1,700 beds that are available today in the event that they were needed for COVID-19. In the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, there are more than 2,300 beds that are available in the event that they are needed for COVID-19. That said, our job is not to deal with the situation where we are, but to be constantly looking forward to the worst case scenario of where we may be. We don't want to be in a situation like what New York is in right now. As a result, we work every single day to make sure that we are coming up with new strategies to either free up more beds or to add additional bed capacity. I'm pleased to see our team members here as well as others who are working on those strategies that will allow us to increase and add more beds in the state of Texas. Also, I'm very pleased to announce what happened yesterday, and that is the president granted a major disaster declaration for the state of Texas. What this does is it frees up a tremendous amount of resources that the state will be able to need and use to respond to COVID-19. It also ensures that local jurisdictions, whether it be cities or counties, are also going to have their needs responded to more robustly and more quickly. Additionally, it provides help for nonprofit organizations and especially for emergency protective measures and crisis counseling that will be needed as we work our way through these challenges. Now, our response right now is keenly focused on doing everything that we can to slow the spread of COVID-19 across the state, especially in the next few weeks. We've seen some model numbers showing that Texas is doing a very good job of this, and I want to applaud everybody at home for you practicing safe distancing practices to make sure that you are not putting yourself in a situation where you could contract COVID-19 and to make sure that others are not spreading COVID-19. It is essential that you continue those practices. Along those lines, I want to let you know that when we make our decisions about what strategies we're going to employ, I look first to Dr. Hellerstedt, who is the commissioner for the Texas Department of State Health Services. He is the lead doctor and lead official in the state of Texas in our response to COVID-19. In addition to that, as a governor, I participate in once or twice a week conference calls with the president, with the vice president, with Dr. Birx, and sometimes with Dr. Fauci. Both of these doctors I just mentioned are doctors that you've seen on TV that are up there on the podium in the White House talking about how the United States is responding to COVID-19, the coronavirus. I was on a phone call earlier today with Dr. Birx, and I was on a phone call last week with Dr. Birx. And based upon information provided by Dr. Birx, in consultation with Dr. Hellerstedt, I am going to be issuing another executive order today. The New York tri-state area is the center of the coronavirus pandemic in the United States. Dr. Birx urged everyone who is traveling from the New York metro area to self-quarantine for 14 days before exposing themselves to the public to make sure that they prevent the spread of COVID-19. Dr. Fauci also called for this measure to ensure that New York does not act, and I quote, as a seeding point to the rest of the country. So to achieve that goal, today I'm issuing an executive order consistent with the guidance from Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci as it relates to people traveling from the New York tri-state area. Those entering the state of Texas through an airport, either in New York, New Jersey, or Connecticut, will be subject to a mandatory self-quarantine for 14 days or for the duration of their stay in Texas, whichever is shorter. In our conversation today with Dr. Birx, we also discussed the dramatic increase in the number of COVID-19 cases in Louisiana and especially New Orleans. At that time, Dr. Birx mentioned it would also be helpful to have a similar quarantine advisory for people traveling from New Orleans. So this executive order that applies to the tri-state area around Metro New York also applies to the city of New Orleans and people flying from the city of New Orleans into the state of Texas. The process works this way. It'll be run and enforced by the Texas Department of Public Safety. Those entering Texas from the areas designated in the executive order will use a form from the Department of Public Safety to designate their quarantine location, whether it's at a hotel or a residence or some other location, and they will also have to provide some other specific identifying information that is on the form provided by the Texas Department of Public Safety. Department of Public Safety troopers will conduct visits to those designated quarantine locations to verify compliance with this executive order. Failure to comply with this order is considered to be a criminal offense that is punishable by up to $1,000 fine or 180 days in jail or both. During the quarantine period, the person shall not allow visitors into or out of the designated quarantine location other than a physician or healthcare provider and shall not visit public spaces. This is intended simply to achieve the goals that have been articulated by the CDC and by the White House organization focused on reducing the spread of the coronavirus in the United States, and that is using every strategy possible to reduce the spread. So in addition to all this, we know we have more work ahead of us as we combat the spread of COVID-19 in Texas, and we know that everybody in the state of Texas is up to that task. We are ramping up and increasing the amount of testing that we're conducting. We are maximizing our hospital space as well as staffing for medical facilities, as well as working to increase supply capabilities. We have a tremendous supply chain operation underway right now that's reaching out every single day to increase the amount of supplies that we desperately need, such as accessing personal protection equipment, masks, gloves, and other medical equipment. And also, we are working every single day to slow the spread of COVID-19 in Texas. You know, in typical Texas fashion, Texans are always prepared to deal with whatever challenge may come our way. And we do it with both a sense of resiliency as well as a sense of compassion. And I am incredibly proud to see the way that my fellow Texans are responding to this challenge. I know that this is difficult for so many of us, whether it be economically or medically or in any other way. But I also know that with each day, we get closer and closer to eventually being able to put this behind us. Let's continue working together to make sure we keep Texas a safe place for everybody, and working together, put this COVID-19 behind us as quickly as possible. With that, I will now turn it over to Dr. Hellerstedt.
Thank you, Governor Abbott. I would just want to comment that the basis, the public health basis for this quarantine is very sound. And it's really asking the folks who are coming from those areas where there is now, if you will, an accelerated and widespread community spread of COVID-19 to help protect everyone here in Texas by quarantining themselves for a period of 14 days. That is really exactly the same thing we would ask of anyone who we know would have a high risk factor of acquiring the disease and therefore spreading it. So we're not asking them to do anything other than what we've asked many people who are similarly situated to do, including folks who reside here in Texas, where we know that they've had contact with a known case, or they're in circumstances that, again, were high risk. So this is really just an extension of many of the kinds of principles and practices and policies that have been in place to combat COVID-19 for many weeks now, But now we see that even within our own country, there are areas of the country where it is very widespread, and that spread is accelerating, and we need to take appropriate measures, and those appropriate measures are part of this executive order.
Thank you. Now for Nim Kidd, Chief of the Texas Division of Emergency Management.
Thank you, Governor. I'd like to highlight a few of the points. The major disaster declaration granted will go a long way in helping provide the resources to our local partners. And, Governor, I want to thank the local partners that are out there on the front line. The work that they're doing, the tireless efforts, the wisdom that they're employing is really what's making this work. So hats off to them, and thank you very much. And the links in the supply chain, while that supply chain has had a couple of snaps, your folks are working around the clock, 24 hours a day, all over the world to rebuild that chain. And we are seeing the fruits of that right now.
That's great. Good news.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take a few questions.
Can you tell us how many hospital beds Texas currently has and how much we might need for APACs when it comes to the state of Texas?
We're working on, so first with regard to the total number of beds that exist, those would not be the ones that we would be using to address the worst case scenario. We need to maintain certain hospital beds in the state of Texas for ongoing needs. You never know when someone may have a heart attack, someone may be in a car wreck, or someone may have whatever type of situation that where they may need access to medical care that would need one of those hospital beds. So the total number of beds is not what's relevant. What's relevant is the total number of beds that are available to be able to address COVID-19. And so we're constantly working on identifying those numbers across the entire state of Texas. And then once we know what those numbers are, we model for what is considered to be a mid-level case scenario or a worst-case scenario. And then we have several different strategies that we're working on as we speak to increase the bed capacity so that we can model whichever strategy may occur.
What about ventilators? Do we have enough ventilators in the state of Texas?
So we put out a request for information from all hospitals in the state of Texas with regard to ventilator capacity. And we're getting that information as we speak. Some early information show that we have some supply to make sure that we will be able to respond to immediate needs. We are working on multiple strategies as we speak to make sure that we will have supply capacity for the worst case scenario. Well, two of the most obvious potential places or other states where that quarantine scenario could apply to would be California and Washington State. Interestingly, in our conversations today and our prior conversations with Dr. Birx or Dr. Fauci or the other leaders of the White House response team to coronavirus, none of those states have been mentioned as a potential quarantine state. Those would be probably the next ones on the list if we were to expand it. There is language in the executive order saying that I can always add to the number of states or other locations that would be subject to quarantine. Right now, there hasn't been any information provided by Dr. Birx, Dr. Fauci, or Dr. Hellerstedt saying that now is the time to add any other state to the executive order list.
How will travelers coming back from these states?
There's nothing in the executive order concerning travel by roadway. This is only travel by airway. The guidance on that will be coming soon. We want to make an assessment of where we stand as a nation. There was a goal, 15 days to slow the spread, and there's going to be a national reassessment here in the coming days to see where we are and see what next steps are. Next steps will be guided by multiple things. One is the advice of Dr. Hellerstedt. Two is the advice of CDC. Three would be the advice of Drs. Fauci and Birx. Right now, it's impossible to make that decision. I would say I see the potential to extend the date when they can open.
A couple more. What do you do? With the testing, I know you say concerns pick up, but our testing per capita is still way behind a lot of the other markets states. Illinois in Louisiana, New York, all the testing at a much higher rate per capita than us. What has been our issue? Why aren't we testing as much as other states?
So we are administering every test that we get. Understanding this, there's two different concepts or two different aspects to testing. First, there's collection, and then there's testing. And so as it concerns both the collection supplies and the testing supplies, we are using full capacity of all those supplies. Those supplies are provided by the federal government. The federal government has triaged this in a way that prioritized New York for obvious reasons, California, Washington, for obvious reasons. There have been more severe cases in Illinois, in Louisiana, and some other states. So the good news is if you were to look and see where Texas ranks in number of deaths, we rank like 11th or 12th in the country in number of deaths. And what the United States is doing is prioritizing the states with higher number of deaths before the state of Texas, as they go through the process of creating greater supplies for COVID-19 tests. That's why those supplies have begun to reach Texas, which is why we've had such a dramatic increase in the number of tests. And you can expect that increase to continue because the country's capability of creating and distributing more tests increases rapidly. Well, on the one hand, I think there's an urgent desire by a lot of Americans to get back to work, to get back to normal. And there's this strong sentiment of not wanting to be constrained to our homes and thing in isolation for too long of a time. So it's that inherent desire that people have. And then, of course, we are such a very powerful economy, the most powerful economy in the entire world. It's important for the world, as well as the United States, that the United States get up and running as quickly as possible. That said, everyone understands that we will all be working off of the best advice of medical professionals about what is the safest way to proceed. We wouldn't want to suddenly open schools and open businesses only have to shut them down again. And so this is an evaluation that takes place on a constant basis to make best judgments about when and how we will begin to reopen the economy as well as all of the other engines of our society. Understanding that the greatest probable pathway is it won't all be at one time. Maybe we can allow certain workers to go back to work, then other workers to go back to work, and measure, monitor the health status along the way. But it is way too early to tell right now.
Thanks, guys.
Will Dupree coming to you from the KXAN Live studio in Austin. We want to tell you about a new executive order that Governor Greg Abbott is issuing today. At the bottom of your screen right here, I'm going to show you in just one second. You can see the parameters of this new executive order. This applies to air travelers only coming into Texas. Anyone coming from New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, or the city of New Orleans by airplane must then go into a 14-day quarantine, and those people who are traveling from those particular areas will have to report where they plan to do that. The governor says that his executive order will mean that if anyone violates that particular quarantine notice and that quarantine requirement, that they could have criminal offenses and criminal punishments. That would include and $1,000 fine, 180 days in jail, or both of those things. So they were wanting to crack down on traveling people coming in from those particular areas because there has been a spike in cases and the severity of cases in those areas, particularly in New York. So that's a new executive order that is going to affect today. We want to also report there are some new numbers that the governor has just shared just a moment ago. If you take a look right here, there are now more than 1,400 positive cases of COVID-19 in Texas. 18 people are now reported dead. That number just breaks your heart because it only keeps going up. And at this point, as you see, it stands at 18. And then finally, there are more than 21,000 people have been tested for COVID-19. The governor also said that less than 10% of those people who got tested for COVID-19, that their results have come back positive. So only less than 10% of those who have gotten tests have come back positive.
Again, that was Texas Governor Greg Abbott's news conference on COVID-19 that was given at 2 p.m. today, Thursday, March 26th. We now continue with the local newspapers.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for March 26th, 2020, Section B, etc. page. Is sugar a poison? Dear Dr. Roach, my uncle, a retired surgeon, is 90 years old. I visit my uncle periodically to inquire about his health and well-being. He eats, but is a little weak. I suggested to my aunt, a retired obstetrician, to give him a nutritional supplement. I take one myself and found it to be effective if taken regularly. The one I recommended contains only 22 grams of total sugars. My aunt told me that according to a CNN medical correspondent, sugar is poison. I was flabbergasted to hear such an answer from her, a medical doctor. Care to change her mind with a comment about the importance of sugars in our daily lives as it pertains to our physiology and metabolism? My uncle is not a diabetic. SF. Answer. When you hear that something is a poison, there are two questions to ask. What is the toxicity and what is the dose? From the standpoint of sugar, there is no longer any question that large amounts of added sugar increase the risk of heart disease and cancer. Sugar is not really necessary in the diet. The liver is capable of making all the sugar needed by the body if there are adequate amounts of protein and fat. However, the body converts the complex carbohydrates found in fruits and vegetables into sugar as well. The best scientific data confirms that a diet high in fruits, vegetables, legumes, and whole grains is a healthy diet, and also that keeping added sugars down is healthy. However, the big picture really needs to be kept in mind. A nutritional supplement for a person in his 90s who may not be eating well might indeed improve his energy level, and the benefit of an additional 5 teaspoons of sugar, about 1/2 a can of a regular soft drink a day, seems to me to be worth the small downside if it helps him. Unlike a soft drink, nutritional supplements contain protein, healthy fats, and other important micronutrients. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536-475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475.
Decades-old loan remains unpaid even after threats. I'm an 83-year-old mother of four. I've been living with my second husband now for 21 years. 19 years ago, my husband loaned one of my daughters and her husband a large sum of money so they could buy a house and pay off bills and judgments. All the necessary paperwork for the loan was signed at the time of the closing with a lawyer present, and it was agreed they would pay us back a certain amount every month. After a few years of mostly regular repayments, the payments dwindled, although they continued to buy expensive electronics and other items. Several years have passed now, and a few checks and cash payments have arrived, but only after much begging. Our lawyer sent them a letter a few years ago telling them to pay up or we would sue them. It resulted in their not seeing or talking to us for a couple of years. We really need the money now, and maybe she's hoping we will just die. What do you suggest we do at this point? Her brother and sisters don't want to get involved. Loving, giving mom. Dear Mom, I'm truly sorry, but because your other children refuse to become involved in convincing your deadbeat daughter and her husband to pay what they owe you, you have no other choice but to contact the lawyer who drafted the agreement and instruct him to follow through. Dear Abby, my first husband retired 4 years ago. At first, he seemed to enjoy not having to go to work, and then he got bored and needed something to do, and for some reason, he bought an old Corvette to restore. I was supportive until I found out it's an expensive hobby. Finding and buying all the replacement parts cost money. He's been working on that car for 3.5 years now, and as soon as he gets it ready to drive, something else breaks. Meanwhile, he has bought 4 more old Corvettes to work on, and our backyard looks like a junkyard. We haven't had a vacation trip since he retired, not even a weekend to the mountains. He argues we can't afford it, but he spends thousands on those old cars, and it has become an obsession for him, and it's driving me crazy. Any suggestions? Corvette widow in the South. Dear widow, healthy couples discuss large purchases before making them. What your husband is doing is destructive to your relationship. It almost seems as though he's using his hobby as a way to avoid spending time with you. My suggestion is that you and your husband find the money to consult a marriage counselor, because what's going on is unfair to you, and if you need a vacation, consider taking one by yourself or with a friend. I will be turning 50 soon. Dear Abby, I will be turning 50 soon. How do I explain to my husband and parents that I just want to spend it alone? Is there something wrong with me for feeling this way? Birthday wish in Iowa. Dear birthday wish, people react to their birthdays, especially milestone birthdays, differently. Some are elated, while others feel depressed. Not everyone wants a lot of hoopla. If you prefer spending your 50th birthday quietly, your wish should be respected, and you should not have to go into a long explanation about why.
Hello, this is April, reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, March 26, 2020. Jacqueline Bigger's Stars. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. A baby born today has a sun in Aries and a moon in Aries until 8:37 a.m. when the moon enters Taurus. Happy birthday for Thursday, March 26, 2020. This year you will feel a relief. It is time to postpone difficult tasks and lighten your workload. Others make suggestions and examine your ideas critically, but you come out on top. Your brilliance and talents will be evident, and you win support. If single, you may be intrigued by new people. If attached, old barriers are cleared away, and you make beautiful progress together. Libra particularly excites you. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 3 stars. Allow yourself plenty of rest, and at work, keep the cold at bay with steaming hot teas. You might find that a nagging worry was just a false alarm. Create happiness and opportunity by developing a more positive attitude. Tonight, get an early night's sleep. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 3 stars. There is an unpredictable mood at work. Prepare for adjustments. Separate your personal feelings from professional duties. With a work colleague, it's best not to reveal details about your personal life too quickly. Use humor and patience with others, and postpone romantic entanglements. Tonight, relax. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 4 stars. Be cautious about a new friendship. Make certain your feelings are reciprocated. Keep a good-humored attitude if others are self-centered. Try not to ask for favors. Your image is enhanced, and you demonstrate what you can do professionally. Tonight, reach out to a child. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 3 stars. Prepare for offers and suggestions. You might mediate a dispute or receive a proposal. Finances are favored. Others might be insecure about their jobs and talents. Bolster a friend with encouraging comments and tell some jokes. Tonight, Spend quality time with an elderly family member. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 5 stars. Your charisma generates support and enthusiasm. Demonstrate what you can do. Be a leader. Examine new investment strategies and look at tax and insurance options, too. Expect ample rewards, but unexpected revelations from your research. Tonight, take time to organize your living space. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 4 stars. You wake up with a new and more positive perspective about what love really means. A healthier quality comes into intimate relationships. Be careful about peer pressure at work and think for yourself. Listen to your own inner guidance. Tonight, make it an early night. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 5 stars. Psychic links with loved ones are becoming more vivid. You will communicate especially well. You will be motivated to seek wellness in every way. Study health-related publications and discuss fitness with others. A partnership is available. Tonight, celebrate a day's work well done. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21, 3 stars. A competitive feeling develops at work or with a project. You will be less interested in material security and more intrigued with other values. It is a time of subtle growth within. By day's end, you will know what you want most. Tonight, take the night off. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21, 3 stars. Improvements and expansion in your home are a focus today. You might plan to move or redecorate. Don't put off essential repairs. Family members are restless. Allow them to grow. It's not the time to repeat old patterns. Tonight, an intimate dinner. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19, 3 stars. Today you are anxious to communicate. Controversy and debate will thrill you. There is a need to crusade for causes you believe in. Humor and patience ease a situation with a difficult neighbor. Allow extra time for travel. Tonight, take a healing bath. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18, 4 stars. There can be important work within a prestigious organization today. Your intuition is guiding you toward long-range goals, and you need to heed it. Charming and charismatic individuals impress you. Make appointments, arrange meetings, and get those results out. Tonight, go somewhere new. Pisces, February 19 through March 20, 4 stars. Today, you feel a little detached from the mainstream of life.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the recording library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or your favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org. 1944.